Welcome to the Real Advisor Podcast, TRAP, TRAP. Please follow us and join in the conversation on Twitter at Advisor Podcast, where you can suggest ideas and themes you'd like the TRAP team to discuss. Also remember to like and subscribe to our YouTube channel and leave a 6 out of 5 star review on iTunes. Doing all this really, really helps us, which means we can do more to help you. Now let's head over to the studio for the latest pile of TRAP.
Yes, indeed, dear Trappist. Welcome back to what many people are calling episode 33 of the Real Advisor Podcast, TRAP Trap. My name is Lick Ninken, and joining me as ever in the studio of doom are the three other horsemen of the apocalypse, Carl the Voice Widger, Alan the Storyteller Smith, and Andy Ultra Heart. Now, gentlemen, we have a show packed full of absolutely nothing, so let's start unpacking it from the get-go with some effervescent, high-energy review reads by my good friend, Mr. Andrew Hart.
Thank you. Today we just have one review. Is my mic? Yeah, it is. Okay. Yep. Today we have one review entitled What a Trap Review 5 Stars. This is from Kyle Punter. Also Kyle Punter on Twitter and LinkedIn. A thoroughly entertaining and insightful podcast all rolled into one. As a relatively new advisor compared to these fine gentlemen, it provides great knowledge and tips as well as reassurance that you are doing the right thing. In what can be a daunting industry for people who care about client outcomes, these guys show that it is a profession for people who simply want to help others first and foremost. The Four Horsemen simplify complicated terminology, products, and investments, and do it all whilst projecting lighthearted humor between themselves. Just when you thought it couldn't be improved any further, I then found that RPM button, which allows you to speed up or slow down the recordings. Personally, I favor the speed 1.25, which means I can squeeze the show nicely under 1 hour to fit into my designated gym workout. This means that Alan's stories are not so long, Andy's coughs are a mere throat clearance, and the voice sounds even more Irish. Be warned not to go to 1.5 or above, as then it can sound like a load of chipmunks having a lively debate about finance. Would you guys consider doing a live show with the audience? Maybe if you hit a certain number of downloads or the show with a certain significant milestone, perhaps your 50th. I'm sure with the popularity of the show and the lure of a conveniently located watering hole that probably excludes Lick, you would get a good crowd of people that would want to watch and be part of the show, keep up the good work. So that's just one review today. Back to you, boss.
Wow, what a brilliant review. Thank you, Kai Punts. I appreciate that. Thanks for putting your name in the review as well. That's great stuff. Well, that's a couple of points in there. We are doing a live show next year. We've talked about this. I think it's in May. I know it's in May. Is it May 24th? I can't remember. We'll be promoting this more and more as we get closer to it. And we have to actually organize something. And also on the download, yeah, we are coming up to the magical 6 figures, aren't we? We're about 95,000 downloads. Great guns for a podcast that is aimed at a very niche specific market. Thanks for reading that out, Andy. Okay, topical tidbits. Well, as ever, the summer months are very quiet, and then stuff just happens, it seems, in the autumn, and we've got loads to get through. So, Mr. Hart, you had, what's the name of your conference? A human? Andy, talk to us about it.
Yeah, sure. So, 2 weeks ago today, Humans Under Management London happened. It was our most successful conference yet. Nick and Alan were there. Carl couldn't make it this year. And you boys will say a couple of words in a second. The overall score out of 10 at the moment is 8.93, which is staggering. The top three speakers in order, number three was Paul Craven. He got 9.18 out of 10. Daniel Crosby, who flew over from the States with his little boy, got 9.41 out of 10. And the winner is Mr. Rory Sutherland with 9.51 out of 10. So, yeah, it was a cracking day. Pretty much the biggest day of my professional career, and I couldn't have been happy with how it all went. So thank you all for those who came. Obviously, the delegates make the event. That's it really. Onwards to next year. So I sold it out many months before kicking off. So now I'm going venue shopping in sort of January 2024 to find a venue that can have 500 people. So it's going to be a huge undertakings for next November. So yeah, over to you and you and Alan, who were hero worshipped, you said during the day, weren't you?
Well, we'll close on the wrap up. But I just want to say to all the Trappists that were there, just thank you very much. It was just lovely. myself and Alan, I think we're just overwhelmed by it, really. Just throughout the day, people coming up to us and saying thank you, and the show's great, and it's we're learning stuff from it. Just really, really lovely. We do appreciate it. You know, the show is for you, and to meet people is a real it's a real privilege. Alan, any comment?
I'm going to give you a new word that you haven't heard before. Liminal. Do you know what liminal means? No, I didn't think so. I'm here to educate you as well as the audience. Liminal is a time or a place between things, between other things. The liminal moments and conferences are arguably as valuable, if not more valuable sometimes, than the core content. The liminal part is the, as we've talked about before, the waiting, the coffee breaks, grabbing a drink, bite to eat, and these random conversations that you have. It was great. You're right. I think I'm right in saying, Andy, this is the first time in all your HUM conferences, which you've done 13 now. This is the first time.
This was the 13th.
That was the 13th. Lucky, unlucky for some. First time that neither Nick nor I did anything at any conference in any country. That's right. Because we were just attendees, which was pretty good, actually.
Oh, wow. And we received the highest score we've ever received.
Yeah, that tells you something.
Okay.
Never attending, never speaking
again. Moving on.
But you're right. The number of people that came up to all of us and just were saying how much they're getting out of Trap. And the one thing, there were so many conversations. One thing just made me smile. I thought it was lovely. There was a group of young advisors, four or five of them, that all work for the same company. And I'm just saying, they told me they've got their own Trap WhatsApp group.
Mad.
Every time there's a new episode, they just discuss it, discuss the latest things we've been going on about, and they tell me they get a hell of a lot from it. So it's lovely. It's lovely to get the positive feedback, and it gives us encouragement to carry on, keep on going.
Well, hopefully we can do a Trap live at HUM London 2024, but obviously we'll discuss that. We're going to do a separate event anyway. So yeah, enough about that.
But you're doing, you're considering doing them in other cities right now. We might Barbados.
Right. Yeah, just to tie. Should we save this for the HUM podcast when it comes out?
Right. Let me just tie a bow in this. Let me just tie a bow in this. So HUM South Africa is going to be on the 17th of September 2024. I'm hoping to do either Dublin or Sydney in October. I need to finalise that soon, and then London will likely be on the 14th of November. Anyway, enough about that. Thank you very much for supporting. It means a lot. Back to you, boss.
No, well done, Andy. Well done indeed. Okay, we're at 500 subscribers on YouTube. It's quite an effort to get subscribers on YouTube, and 500 is quite a decent number. So when we get to 1,000, that does give us a chance to sort of monetize the show a little bit. But that's a bit of a landmark. No need to comment on that necessarily. Voice, your unique ideas exchange. The first one ever of its kind in Ireland, if we understand it.
Well done, you. Well done, you, Carl.
Indeed. Thursday, the 30th of November, House on Leeson Street in Dublin at 6 p.m. If you're a principal of a financial planning firm or of a firm that's looking to transition to financial planning, please do come along. It has been pointed out that I have perhaps inferred that this is a unique idea. I didn't think I did. I apologize to anyone who was offended. I know it's not a unique idea, clearly, because we've spoken about the ideas exchange here. I do know there's a couple of smaller groups in Ireland. I just thought I'd put it out there. So if you're interested, who knows where it might go? It might go absolutely nowhere, but all are welcome. And I know there's about 10 or 12 have said that they're definitely going. There might be more coming along. So I'll fill you all in on the next episode as to how it went. Assuming we can tell you how it went. But anyway, looking forward to it. Looking forward to catching up with everybody, and should be a bit of fun.
Brilliant, brilliant. Okay, Alan, you've got a bit of from my perspective, you can maybe disabuse me, but it sounds like a horror story, Consumer Duty update.
Is that a horror story? There's a couple of points I just want to raise. Look, here's the headlines on Consumer Duty, just to remind you and Carl, who isn't affected yet. Consumer Duty is a wide sweeping piece of legislation that came into force in July of this year. all of us just simply had to comply. Like all these things, you don't pay it too much attention until it gets close to the deadline. You say, you know, shit, what are we supposed to do here? And you make sure it's done. And credit to my colleague Shireen, who took care of it all for us. And there was a lot more actually that she did that I wasn't fully aware of. But you know, we're compliant by the deadline. Happy days. Just fast forward to present, a few months later. One of the responsibilities, one of the expectations, is that organizations make sure that all their employees, all the people in the team, are fully conversant, up to date, and have been trained. So as a result of that, we're rolling out training internally here at our firm, and that includes me. And so recently, I had to spend some time going through, updating my knowledge, reading, getting, and really spending quite a lot of time, a disproportionate amount of time, making sure I was fully au fait with the information, the legislation, what's expected of us, and actually had to do a test to confirm that I had done that. And I just stopped and I thought, wow, this stuff is quite hard hitting. This stuff really is kind of bigger than I had initially thought it was. So I'm just going to throw a couple of points out. The regulator, the FCA, specifically targets percentage charging and fee models for advisors, and specifically uses phrases like conflicts of interest and similar service or same service for broadly similar fees. And it really goes into quite some detail about that. It talks a lot about value for money. And I know Nick will say the value is decided by the clients, but there's an increasing kind of narrative coming out of the regulator to say, you know, we will have an impact on what we perceive to be value for money. And tying that up is, you know, giving some evidence of that. Well, first of all, we all of our kind of investment propositions generally for our clients take the view that markets are efficient, and markets and stock markets and capital markets are generally forward looking. You know, all the information is currently baked into the price. And you begin to look at people like St. James's Place, whose share price has halved in the last few months, but they're not the only one. All the listed discretionary portfolio managers in the UK that I've looked at have had similar collapses in their share price. And it's pretty obvious to me that, you know, all the markets and the analysts and the people who look at these things in detail are fully conversant with the legislation and saying these organizations will not be able to get away with it to the extent they have been doing. I think some of the biggest the biggest organizations that will be hit by this stuff are the traditional discretionary portfolio managers who, to this day, and I look at stuff, I looked at another one last week, are charging between 2-3% per annum
for financial advice.
Financial planning for basically portfolio management. When you know you can buy an off the peg version, which is as good as you need for 95% of the population for, you know, for pennies, really. I just don't see how these people can continue in their current format. And just to put additional bit of color on this, there's been legislation in the past. RDR came in. There was a kind of, what would you call that, assets review that the FCA did a few years ago. And this is the latest one. And I initially thought it's another just piece of nonsense. It's a tick box exercise. We'll tick the boxes and life will move on. I'll give you some real life evidence that there's more to it than this. In the last couple of weeks, our firm received a letter from a platform provider that we use a lot, which in turn was encouraged by the regulator. And they identified, I think, 3 or 4 clients, and they asked us to justify our fees for those clients. And all they looked at was the fee that we were taking. As you know, we charge retainers, but the fee we were taking in relation to the value of the portfolio sitting on their platform. Now, of course, they know nothing about our relationship with the client. They don't know where their other assets are held. Mm-hmm. They don't know what our arrangement with the client. And, you know, they weren't saying this is awful, you can't do this, but they were saying, please report back and tell us why this fee looks disproportionate. And one in particular was an interesting one that we just took on, which was we recently took on a client, and they came with an ETF. They already owned an ETF. And as we're kind of going through, and our portfolios don't hold ETFs for various reasons, but we held, whilst we were getting everything else organized, it was on the platform for a couple of months. And of course, if there's income being taken out of it, that's a trade, considered a trade. And I think the platform charges £10 a trade. So they're looking at things like overtrading. Why has there been 4 trades on this and cost the client £40 for this? And of course, we explain, well, we're going through a process where we're going to you know, stop doing that in the very near future. It was never our intention, but something we inherited. But just interesting, platforms are now analyzing with the backing of the regulator, looking at clients, looking at portfolios, looking at fee charges in relation to values of portfolios. And I think this is just the beginning of it. Long story short, I think it's actually a very good thing. And I think the ultimate beneficiary will be the customer, but it will be at the expense of a lot of the fat that exists in the industry and has done for decades. And I think long, you know, 5 years from now, 7 years from now, be a far better sector, and more people will be encouraged to seek financial advice. So, Carl, you've got a point.
Yeah, just to come in, that's like unbelievably interesting. Did I also see, Alan, that one of the points that's coming through is that they would, the regulator would like to see all clients get cash flow modeling of some description.
Yep, that's another point. I posted that. Yeah, exactly right.
Like when I think about the Irish market, obviously we haven't had RDR. It was been talked about, but we haven't implemented it. Like this is like eight steps ahead of RDR.
Yeah, you can just cut out RDR, go straight to Consumer Duty.
Yeah, they are
calling it RDR too. Yeah,
and maybe that's what they will do. But I think you're right. I think it seems a lot of it maybe seems a little bit draconian. But who's going to win? The client is definitely going to win here. The question I would have is, how are they planning on regulating this, on actually implementing the regulation? And will there be, you know, inspections? Will there be fines? How is there any indication as to how they're going to actually implement the new regulation?
Yeah, the narrative that's come from the regulator, you see some of the letters, they've issued a Dear CEO letter. You might be familiar with this concept. They write out to everyone. Everyone has received one. And the words are pretty, you know, robust, hard-hitting. It's sort of along the lines of, you know, make no mistake, we will be following this up. We'll be enacting where we see things. We'll be visiting. We're increasing our resources.
Okay.
I mean, there's another huge thing that they've said. It's kind of data driven. So vulnerable clients is an issue. You know, everyone's got vulnerable clients, and actually everyone, according to the data, well, the vast majority of human beings will be vulnerable by the definition at some point in their life. So they've done their research, and something like 69%, 70% of stockbrokers, discretionary managers say they have zero vulnerable clients. And by definition, that can't be right.
Jeez.
So they're really focusing on that. And they're immediate. So it's only been in place, you know, a few months, and they're already coming back with their feedback, their data, and say, unacceptable, unacceptable. We will be putting resources. I think this is a great thing for businesses like ours and others who are listening to this.
That was the point I was going to make. Like, I mean, surely this is, you know, if you're doing
financial planning,
low-cost funds, that kind of stuff, this has to be a massive, massive opportunity.
Behavioral
if they brought this
stuff
into the Irish market now, I think... I
85% would be gone. Yeah,
it'd be decimated.
I think it might even be 90%. Does the client win out of this? Yes, the client definitely does. Therefore, this is a good thing. I've always extolled the virtue of proper corporate governance and looking after the client first. And I think this can only be a good thing. Albeit, I appreciate it has meant an awful lot of extra work for everybody in the UK market, but I'd love to see the Irish regulator following suit and doing something similar. I really, really, really would.
Any thoughts, Nicholas?
Well, I mean, I felt my blood pressure rising as you described your experience. I mean, there are definitely people in this profession on the industrial side of what we do who charge way too much and don't offer any value for it and have done for, you know, DFMs.
Decades.
SFS, yeah. DFM. You heard of SFS, DFM? School fees sorted, not for the clients, but for Tarquin and Petronella. The school fees are sorted by the exorbitant fees they charge, and these people have got a riddance to them. But if I got a letter from my platform saying justify this fee, I just don't know how I would react. I don't think I'd react particularly well to it, I have to say.
Respond. You do a two-line email response, and then move on.
It would be a two-word.
That's fine. That's all you need. That's all you need, and then they. Two-word response.
Yeah, you're doing more than enough, Nick, as you know. You know, financial planning led portfolios, blah blah.
Of course, he is. So are we all.
Yeah.
So yeah, the good news is, if a firm like us, which has been doing all these things for years, gets the letter, then and we're getting examined, then we'll deal with the rest of the market that does none of this stuff. What their answers are going to be will be interesting. Carl?
What's the percentage of firms, never mind the DFMs and the bigger firms, but of the IFA market who are actually doing cash flow modeling, real financial planning, as we would describe it? Like, is there still a big lag? Is there still a whole huge cohort who are not doing it?
If I was being very generous, I'd probably say 20%. If I was being quite pessimistic, it could be even low as 10%. You know, we're in a slightly different bubble, aren't we? But a lot of them are obviously embracing it. They know it is the future, so they are accelerating that journey towards it.
There's one thing knowing it's the future, and there's another thing the regulator telling you it is the future, and if you don't do it, you're not going to be allowed advised clients. Like, this is massive, massive,
it's
massive.
It's huge.
Yeah. And there are some well-known brands in this country, certainly, who say they do cash flow modeling, but they pay lip service.
So your mic's a bit scratchy, so maybe try and speak a bit quieter anyway.
Or not at all.
Or we'll just go on, the three of us.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. We've done
sort
that.
Your tech out.
Really, 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 really interesting stuff, though. No, thanks, Adam.
Okay.
Cheers.
There's a link in the show notes but with the FCA letter about the fee justification put in there by Smithy. Okay. Now, Morningstar came out with an article there. I think they do it every year, actually. New research on safe withdrawal rates. That was put into the show notes by somebody else, but apparently I've now been tagged with it, so I can talk about it. Bizarrely, the Morningstar, their safest portfolio for a 30-year retirement portfolio with the highest withdrawal rate is one that has 20% in equities and 80% in fixed income. And their premise is, well, that's the client goes into it yesterday. Bond yields are now so much higher than they were a year ago or 2 years or even 5 years ago. You can have way more. But I still don't get it. I still do not understand how a 30-year portfolio predominantly massively in fixed income can cope with rising lifestyle costs. It just doesn't, they've got all the research and they have these guardrails and the assumptions they make and so forth. But to me, I just think that's nonsense. And that, so a 2080 portfolio, 20% equities, 80% bonds, the withdrawal rate is 4%, they say, over 30 years. And you'll have a 90% success rate of the portfolio outliving the person. Whereas a 100% equity portfolio has a withdrawal rate of 3.3% over 30 years. Maybe I'm thick. Fixed income, rising lifestyle cost. You know, the dissonance in my head is just too much. I can't compute that. I don't know if you guys have any feelings on this report.
It was me who put it in to the show notes because I read it a few days ago. And I mean, these things come out all the time. It just feels somewhat distanced from the real life practical experience of working with other clients and human beings, because there's a phrase, I can't quite remember it, but it's something like, it's like naive precision, because the amount of precision that's built into this, it says something like they've got this range of portfolios, 100% equities all the way through. And it's there, then it gives you, in terms of the safe withdrawal rate, it talks about 3.1%, 3.4%, 3.6% based. And it's trying to put human beings into a spreadsheet. And guess what, Morningstar? It just doesn't work. Because it doesn't, we've talked about this before, and no doubt we'll talk about it again. And this is another message for the younger Trappists listening in who get caught up and read this stuff and then try to optimize for precision and efficiency and have a 3.156% withdrawal rate for their client. And then guess what? The client gets ill, or the client gets divorced, or the tax rates go up 10%, or just life happens. And Nick, you often say this is an art as well as a science. This is the science part of it, the Morningstar talk about. Fine, it provides you a framework and some grounding, but the art part of it is far more important, because the art is about the human experience. And so I would read this sort of stuff and then dismiss it. Not rudely, but I think that's interesting, but it doesn't apply to every client on a day-to-day basis.
And it's typically always done by people who aren't practitioners. I know I go on about this like a broken record, but it's the sort of boffins, the techs who come out with this stuff. I just don't, it doesn't have that much relation to the real world. For, you know, an easy example is you've got a retired couple and maybe they were drawing at 6-7% from their portfolio, but it'll come down to 4-5% when their state pensions kick in or when their final sat. It's just this, oh, it's going to be 4% for the next 30 years and we think that's safe. It's just, that's just so disconnected from what we experience.
Life doesn't go in a straight line.
you know, it's nuts.
And it's I love the science and art bit, you know. And do you know what this reminded me of when I read it? It was like probably less to the fore now, but like, do you remember back early 2000s, certainly in Ireland, we had like loads of fund managers saying, here's what we're going to do. We're going to do a new strategy based on a spreadsheet that tells us if we did the strategy for the last 5, 10, 15 years, it's going to work. And it never works because things change. And as Alan says, you know, life just happens. And when life goes in transition, money moves, the famous Mitch Antony phrase. You know, trying to find linear solutions in people's families' financial plans, it can't work. It does not work. It will never work. That is why real financial planning is a process. It is not a one and done. And I think there's some links to this in terms of a question that's going to be asked later on, because, you know, reviewing financial planning for a family on an annual basis is so, so important. And that's your AGM. But EGMs happen. You know, when stuff happens in your life, you gotta just step in, review the financial plan and make changes.
Like that, Carl, like that. Yeah, there's one world that's all just AGM and everything is hunky-dory. But actually, in the real world, there's lots of EGMs that come up. That's a very good way of framing it. Okay, so the next thing. Oh, Mr. Smith, you're going to bring some filth into the conversation.
You're not supposed to say that. I posted it in our, notes. I just said filth. I hope the lawyers aren't listening. Look, this is just something... I travel on London Underground. I came down to the tube station the other day at Bank Station in the city of London, where hundreds of thousands of people pass through every day. And I see this massive billboard for a company called Tickmill, tickmill.com. And effectively, they're an online trading platform. And they are saying, open an account, takes 2 seconds, and make loads of money and trade. Contracts for difference, whatever they are.
Oh my
trade
God.
Options, leveraged trading, you know, borrow money and all this sort of stuff. And so I look at this as a man. You know, you see people looking at it. The point of advertising is it tends to work. Otherwise, people wouldn't advertise. And so thousands and thousands of people pass by. So you go online and I quickly check their website. You know, it does say, albeit in a kind of disclaimer down the bottom, 70% of investors lose money using our services. 70% lose money because they have to have some disclaimer. And you look at that led me to look at a couple of other ones. There's another one, I can't remember their name, but they say 86% of investors lose money. If actually, and it depends on the time horizon you talk about.
Yeah, it's closer to 99.
It's closer to 99%.
Once the time horizon goes, yeah.
Yeah, if you go into the years, 99% of people lose money. And
just a pure gambling company.
And even those who make money, investors, some other report I saw come out of the US, it's equivalent to
gamblers.
It's equivalent. Look, there's 0.0001, whatever, because that's the nature of distribution of outcomes and just data statistics. Some people, one in a million makes a fortune, you know, one in 10 million win the lottery, et cetera. But even those, a small amount that do make money, it's kind of equivalent to minimum wage. You know, you earn more working in McDonald's, you know, for the time you spend. So earlier on, I was giving some kind of general positive faint praise towards the regulator, the FCA, that now I'm going to criticize them because this is an approved advertisement that is going to create meaningful
misery,
negative outcomes and harm to retail customers and investors. Because I tell you, people are, you know, it's tough times out there. There is a cost of living crisis. Things are going on. And if you've got like a small amount to spend, you think I can trade my way into, you know, good financial outcomes, and you open an account. And no doubt, obviously I didn't do it. No doubt it takes 2 seconds to open an account. It'll be very quick and efficient and slick. Mm-hmm. It won't be some of the stuff we have to do and the hoops we have to jump through. And so I think the regulator ought to clamp down on this stuff. If you're a serious professional investor, you know, have a party, knock yourself out. But if you're an average punter going through a bank tube station and think that's a good idea, I'll open this up on my phone, you're destined for a world of hurt, my friend. So best avoid
it. And the other thing, like, not only will they lose their money that they put in, like if you're doing CFDs with leverage, right, you've got these dreaded margin calls.
Yeah.
Well, there's no limit to your downside. If you just put money in, you
sounds can like get, someone talking from experience there, Carl.
Just, but in the meantime, Smithy, you know, just make sure you can justify your fees. Yeah.
When we'll do.
Bureaucrat you don't know from Adam.
There is a cost of living crisis. I can tell that by Alan's grey shirt. Anyway, back to you, Nick.
You're obsessed. You've got an obsession with this shirt. Okay, moving on. So Advisor Asset is a platform that enables you to do your wrap due diligence and pension switch comparisons. It's got a reduction in yield calculator. I use it for my platform due diligence. It's used by a number of IFAs. And they've just got a new thing where they, I think on a daily basis, which might be a bit too much for people, but they curate all the announcements from platforms and insurance companies in one email. So if that's a way of keeping in contact with the industry and the profession, you might want to do that. I'll put a link to it in the so-called show notes, and you just say, sign me up for your communications targeting UK financial advisors. It's not the best landing page. You've got to type that into the box, and that'll come into your inbox, and it's a way of keeping in touch. If you don't, so I don't listen. I don't really read so much New Model Advisor anymore, or any of those publications so much. So there you go. Just another source of data. Mr. Hart, you're now going to finagle Hotel Chocolat into financial services, make it relevant for our Trappist audience. Go.
Yeah, this is just a very brief point, but Hotel Chocolat, the famous luxury chocolatier, has been recently sold to Mars for a very inflated price compared to its share price before the news came out. So I think it's sold for about $500 million. And it was just the thing that struck me was the founder of this company has been very outspoken about how authentic he and his brand is. And he was sort of going up against. Yeah, Angus. Yeah,
Angus Thirlwell.
The other guy. Yeah,
close personal friend.
Close personal friend.
Come on, Nick. You're off colour today.
He's slacking. Yes, so they sold to Mars for that. So they sold to Mars for. They sold to Mars for $500 million. It's the whole selling out concept that, again, financial advisor business owners have to, you know, navigate that themselves. You know, integrity will cost you a fortune, but it's worth every penny. That's the sort
another
of key
one I
phrase
gave you.
Here.
Yeah,
another one.
Thank you. I gave you.
I embellished. Anyway, So Innocent Drink sold to Coca-Cola. Costa Coffee sold to McDonald's. You know, it's the business narrative that, you know, is ever present, isn't it? You know, new startups come along and then companies with that are slow learners with deep pockets end up buying them.
Oh, another one I gave you.
That's basically how it works. So I just thought I'd mention it. If there's in relation to financial advisors, obviously they have that dilemma of who do they sell to? Because for years they've been banging on about, you know, their story and they're the startups and, you know, they do things with high integrity, and then, you know, a big check comes along and things might change. So yeah, that's my final point on it. Anyone wish to say anything?
No.
Tumbleweed. Okay. Thank you.
Andy, very interesting, Andrew. Move on.
You intentionally did that, lads. I'll get you back. All right.
Yes, we did.
At least we're intentional.
Leave them hanging, boys. Leave them hanging.
Okay. Quick plug for my IFA forum thing. It's now about 350... advisors and power planners and people in the advice chain, a very good Google group that you might want to consider signing up for, especially if you work on your own and you just want to have a forum where you can post questions to and get answers. It just kind of works. And I'll put a link to it in the show notes. Yes, Andy.
Yeah, just to follow up on that, it is absolutely brilliant. It's very, very technical, so practical. You know, a lot of the other forums are just, you know, high level, wishy-washy. This is like, bang, I need a real good steer on this really technical thing that I know someone in this group is going to help me out with. So if you are listening to this and you are a UK advisor, or Irish advisors obviously can join, but yeah, definitely do join it and go out of your way to find out how to do it. Thanks for sending it up,
tiny.cc/IFA forum, but I'll put a link to it in the show notes. Thank you for the kind words, Mr. Hart. Mr. Smith, FinTech launch.
Yeah, just a quick one. I love the whole concept of entrepreneurship and startups and founding new ideas, new businesses. It's amazing. Spent a lot of my time in amongst and in that world. But my heart sinks a little bit when I see yet another fintech startup. So what are they called, Andy? Tide Bank? Is it Tide or Tidal? Yeah. So it's
Tide.
Tide. So Tide Bank are one of these so-called challenger banks in the UK. And I just noticed in one of the tech publications last week, they've raised £3 million from seed type investors to launch a new online digital wealth management
to platform. Disrupt the entire wealth management industry. You know,
that's rinse the phrase. And repeat. Quid.
Yeah,
exactly. No, they'll spend that first month.
Yeah, exactly. And well, look, who knows? They might be the first ones to crack it. But the narrative, if you read the story, and look, there are some really smart people who've had huge successes through their own sort of tech businesses and startups in the past that are throwing money into this. But once again, they're going for low cost. They're saying wealth management needs
to be disrupted. Even free, Alan. Free. Some of the funds, it's even worse. Why don't they just set up something really good digital and charge accordingly and be profitable? Yeah. The consumers are not up for just paying nothing. They'll happily pay for a service that's amazing. It blows my mind. Sorry, mate.
Well, no, it's a couple of other points that you said. Well, one of your phrases, and I'll give you this one, was people don't want cheap, they want safe. It's true. And you mentioned, Andy, Pension B. Who charge what, 7.7, which is considered to be expensive.
0.75, and yeah, proudly so. They want to be a profitable, sustainable company. Yeah.
Which they seem to be. I don't know if they're in profit yet, but they're a listed business. They're listed on the London Stock Exchange, and I would give them more chance of survival than some of these other companies charging zero or a couple of basis points for online services. I mean, interestingly, I looked at something the other day. These challenger banks, Tide, Starling, a few others, they make a lot of noise, but they haven't made much inroad really into the kind of retail banking segment. They're still single digit percentage of the entire market after, 10, 15 years or so. So they haven't exactly disrupted. And I think what is happening is a lot of the incumbents, the big banks with deep pockets, listed companies, they'll begin to catch up on the tech. It's great to have a competitive marketplace, but when you see yet another online digital platform being launched, when someone like Vanguard with 8 trillion of assets under management can't make it work in the UK. We noticed, did we talk about it last time? Can't remember, but we know that they've closed down their operation in Germany. Which is a huge market, bigger than the UK in terms of, what is it, 100 million population? So it must be a big market. Vanguard can't make it work in Germany, can't make it work in the UK, but yet another startup thinks that they can, coming in lower cost than even Vanguard.
Yeah, so they're offering wealth management for free and they've got a 3 million run rate. I mean, what could go wrong?
By the way, I've just looked at my notes. It's not Tide Bank. Tide is washing powder. It's Tandem. Tandem Bank.
That's right, Alan.
And we know why washing powder came up, because we, believe it or not, Trappist, we're talking about washing powder just before we came on. Weren't we, Andrew?
We were. Oh, look, Andrew's leaving you out to hang now. This is all getting very childish. Come on. Be nice to each other. But yes, if you're doing a whites-only wash, it's well worth putting in a white detergent in addition to a normal tab.
And he's talking about putting his clothes in the dishwasher.
We can bring a bigger
Listen, Gray shirt. Listen, Gray shirt. Gray shirt, you can't say anything.
This is a Gray shirt. What's the problem?
All right.
I just make one?
It's just a light. It probably is white if you go outside.
Shambles.
Can I make one? Nick, do you mind if I just make one comment? People, firms who are coming in to disrupt markets, right? You're not. Stop saying that. You're just not. There's people doing it already. Like, disruption of a market is not, I'm going to charge less.
Exactly. Right? It's like Uber.
Uber disrupted. Because they charge less,
Skype,
more efficient.
Skype, no, totally Uber, new. Uber, totally
Uber.
New.
Yeah. No, Uber, no, totally
Uber,
new.
Uber work. Sorry, Kyle. Uber work, because Airbnb. It's a Morris Southern thing. You don't mind the plane being delayed by two. If you're told it's delayed by two hours,
there's a lot more to Uber than just lower cost.
You can see how
exactly.
You're
wait. So they did disrupt.
They disrupted. Airbnb disrupted the hotel sector.
There's
Netflix disrupted. There's a few disruptors, but doing lower cost, cheaper online portfolio. Hargreaves Lansdown have been doing this for 30 years.
1981. 1981 they started it.
Right, 40 years plus. And all they're doing is like a cheaper version of Hargreaves Lansdowne and less effective. So
and a crapper. Worse. Yeah. Hargreaves Lansdowne's a wonder company. They're amazing at admin. They're great to deal with.
So that's the only
These
point
guys will be closing down. They'll be closing down.
Yeah, thanks for that, Carl.
It's insulting, actually. It's insulting them coming in thinking they're disrupting it just because they're doing it for cheaper. It's ridiculous.
Okay.
Weetabix
moments. Weetabix moments. Okay, finally, final topical tidbit. 40 minutes. Get me some rope. Mr. Smith, you're planning for next year.
Yes. We are at the time of recording. We're heading towards the end of 2023. And I'm just sort of throwing it open in terms of what people think about what do you do for planning next year? So I have just booked 3 days away by myself in a little cottage on the beach where I've got time away from the office, away from home life, where I've got time to, this is not a story. I've got a story coming up.
Grab yourself a drink, a very long drink. It's story time with Alan Smith.
Once again, you were premature, Mr. Lincoln. Once again.
You don't tell me you've got a story coming up. How am I supposed to know?
Just trust me. I've always got a story. Well, not always. I've got a brief story coming up in a few minutes. But this is not a story. This is just a reflection. This is something those of us who are serious about our business lives, I think that next year will be an interesting year. I think it'll be challenging in many ways. I think the economy will be extremely challenging. There's, as we already know, there's a hell of a lot going on in our sector, in our industry. And I like to take time away because I never give myself enough time to think, to reflect, and to plan and to organize. And so I'm taking myself away for 3 days. I just booked an Airbnb, cottage on the beach, secret location. Can't tell you boys because you might come and crash it and try to take me out to the pub, which I'm not going to do.
You have told us, and we are going to crash it.
I haven't told you the location.
You shared the exact
picture.
Yes, no location, no. I specifically removed the link.
You're going on your own to reflect for 3 days. So you're going to talk to nobody for 3 days.
Correct.
God bless Kat when you get home.
Yeah. I am.
There'll be a lot of talking he needs to get out of the system.
Oh, I'm thinking of going on a silent retreat. No talking for 7 days. I'm not kidding.
You'll be kicked out in the first 3 hours.
No, I'm not going to do that. No, I think, Carl, you must be taking some time to plan. You're pretty good at planning ahead, organizing. You've got a big year at Messes Norway next year. So what are your thoughts
on planning
ahead? Yeah,
I do, but I do that a couple of times a year, as you know, and it is really good. As we've got a little bit bigger, we have to do budgets and all that kind of stuff, right?
Yeah, I know.
Which means I'm sitting looking at spreadsheets a lot in the last few weeks, and really, God almighty, it is... I just hate doing it. But it has to be done. And we're in serious planning mode. Like we've a lot more people now. So the expectations of everybody has to be very, very, very clear. And we got to be very disciplined about our approach. So rather than doing a lot of stuff kind of off the cuff and ad hoc as we go, it's like, no, we got to plan it out. We got to know what events are on. We got to, so it's all a year in advance, which is, do you know what? It's good discipline. And especially for me, because I tend to have these great ideas and just follow them as opposed to, right, let's decide now, what are we going to do? What are we going to focus on? And we'll talk about that actually a little bit more. So, but going away on your own for a few days, it is just absolutely you got to take some time. You said this to me, Alan Lodes, right? You got to take some time to sit at your desk with nothing on your agenda. Mm-hmm. And this is just taking that to a kind of another level. Just go away, be on your own, go to a nice place. I went to a place in Ireland last year called Park Nasilla. I spent 4 or 5 days down a beautiful, beautiful place. I did a lot of walking in the afternoons and I just sat and kind of wrote ideas. And that was at the... around this time last year, I'd say.
Yep.
And we've had a great year. I don't know if it's because of that, but there's lots of little things add up to make a successful business. And that's certainly one of them, I would say.
Mm. Yep. I recommend it. I won't ask these two jokers because they make it up as they go along. But Andy has got what would you like to introduce?
I'm super excited about 2024. I think it's going to be a fantastic year for many reasons. I think we're heading into a bit of a boom period, let's hope.
Yeah, I think my 2024 is pretty much sort of sketched out. I've got all my annual planning meetings between January and March, got the conferences later on in the year, and most of my training days have been booked out. So I'm waking up on January the 1st with pretty much, you know, the full agenda sorted out. Obviously, I've got trap every 2 weeks as well. So yeah, I'm not really looking for too much growth. It's more maintaining what I currently have. Yeah, it sounds interesting going away for a couple of days on your own, Alan. I've never done it, but I travel quite a bit on my own anyway, so I've got quite a lot of thinking time. I'm certainly not having a packed diary next year. I'm pretty much blocking out my entire year now. So I'm trying to avoid any phone call conversations. They just ruin my flow. So it's just only important meetings are going to get into the diary. It's weird. I'm sort of the busiest I've ever been with the most amount of clients. Fucking hell.
You got him, Nick. Well done. Everything and can't be told anything.
His name is too hard. Yeah, mum, not now, mum. You're ruining my flow, mum. I'll call you back. I'll call you back in 3 months. Put it in the diary.
In fairness, he didn't. He it took him a lot. It took him what, 48 minutes to break, but we broke him.
Hold on. Anyway, I'm just
a question. When you say block out your diary, right? Do you put in time? Because I know Alan does this. Time of nothing. Because I just feel guilty myself if I put in time for nothing.
Oh, definitely, but, definitely,
yeah, yeah, definitely.
That's a huge thing that I really, really struggled with because. Despite rumors to the contrary, I'm a worker. I've always, you know, come from humble roots. I come from Scotland.
You're a worker. Have you said that correctly?
I'm a I'm a complete worker. And
you're the biggest worker I know. You're the biggest worker I've ever known.
But we are in the thinking profession. I know Nick's going to just eyes glaze over and luckily
yeah, we
your
think
mic's,
hard
your mic's,
for a living.
Your mic's
we think hard
working.
For a living.
Yeah, we think hard for a living. And honestly, I would just take, and I've taken time out in the park. I try to do it every week, but then sometimes I don't do it. And go for a walk in the park. And I sit in the park bench. And I just stare into space and I think. And that's where all the best ideas, the best thoughts come. You're never going to get your best idea. You're never going to come up with good things to do whilst you're, you know, on a computer screen doing stuff on a phone call and a Zoom call, etc.
Get out there. The more I do get out of there, see people's stuff, I get stuff on my email, phone call.
Exactly.
If I just sit in my office for 2 weeks, nothing good will happen.
Nothing good will happen.
If I just bugger off for 3 or 4 days or even, you know, go away or something, lots of stuff happens. I don't quite know what that is.
There's maybe another, I don't know, just conversation, probably not on this one because we're running over time, but about optimizing and organizing your day, your week, your month. There's things that I now do that I didn't used to do.
Yeah,
which I just, and we're in the, we remain in this, and I think we always will be this kind of hybrid work style. And there's things, there's locations where I optimize for certain activities, and some not others. And there's times of day, and I've tried, for example, a quick example, I would just avoid at all costs wherever, unless it's absolutely super urgent, remember, any meetings, any phone calls, anything to do with anyone meeting anyone else until lunchtime every day. Morning, if you do 2, 3, 4 hours of deep work, creative work, whatever it might be, in the morning. And then afternoons are free for other things, engagements, meetings, face-to-face, social, etc. For me, anyway, it works. It works, but rather than a jumbled-up calendar, jumbled-up diary with a meeting here, trying to write a blog article there.
Yeah, maybe this is a conversation to be developed. You know, what does the optimum quarter look like? You know, and break it out over a couple of months and what that looks like. Yeah,
yeah.
I'd start small with it, Carl, as in block out every other Monday or something. And then I started blocking out every Monday. And then I started blocking out every other Friday and every Monday. Now I just block out basically
every day.
The whole year.
I do it as well. I Monday 7 a.m. till 9 a.m. in my calendar I block it out every week, those 2 hours, and I call it GSD, getting stuff done. And I just look at the week ahead. I do the worst tasks that are coming up in the week. I do them in that mornings. On that Monday, I just get my head organized. I see what I've got to do, and I just think about things. I read, I'll read financial services stuff on the web and consume content. But I don't want to be doing a client meeting first thing on a Monday. I want to get my head in order, and I want to get my diary mapped out for the week. And that every week, Monday 7 till 9, it's GSD, getting stuff done. Don't ask the phone's in airplane mode. It's just me
between Monday 7 a.m. and 9 a.m. Nick. Like nobody listening to this would ever have a client meeting between 7 and 9 a.m. on a Monday.
It's like, that's
dead time anyway.
No, I do 7 a.m.
to 9 p.m. Monday. Now I'm in. 7 a.m. to 9 a.m.
My client meeting is 7 a.m. till 2:30. That's the window you've got me in. Except for Monday, but Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday,
I think
Friday.
The earliest client meeting start for me is 10 a.m.
No, I've done some 7:30s this year. It works. Works.
All right.
Okay.
We'll come back to this.
Definitely. Because I'm on this. My big thing is I'm feeling guilty if I've nothing in my diary, so I need to get over myself. And because I do know when I refresh.
Your best work is when you're thinking.
You
think hard for a living. We think hard for a living.
Okay. Maybe we'll do it as a let's plan me out. How am I going to do it? All right.
Great.
Thanks, boys.
So I think it's time that we moved on to the meat and potatoes of the show. We're 50 minutes in, and we are going to do a series of what we're loosely calling marketing masterclass episodes, probably three on the bounce. And this is the first of the three of them. And the first of those three, we're going to talk about building a repeatable referral strategy. And Mr. Smith, you're going to lead us off on this one.
Okay, I wait for the sharpening knives to stop. So, look, everyone you speak to talks about growth. Everyone in our industry talks about growth. Everyone needs to grow their business. If you're not growing, you're dying. Historically, referrals, and by referrals, let's frame that from the beginning. Referrals, I mean referrals from existing clients. You do good work, and everyone tells you, all the experts tell you, that's the way to grow a business. Get further introductions and recognition and referrals from other clients. And the concept of having this phrase, a repeatable, scalable, systemized process for capturing referrals. I've been in many conferences over the years, and people, the sort of speaker says, you know, raise your hand if you've got what I just described. Almost no one raised their hand. People say, is it the single biggest opportunity you've got? Everyone raises their hand. Yes, referrals are the biggest opportunity, but very few people have ever nailed this. We all get referrals kind of by accident. I'll speak for myself. We get them. Of course we get them. They're a big source of business for us, but they're kind of accidental. There's not a lot of intention around it. And I've given a lot of thought to this over the years. I've actually built something here called the Referral Strategy Toolkit, and I've just gathered a lot of information. I've read a lot of books about it, and I'll highlight a couple of those in a moment. Sources that you can go to which optimize this strategy. And I've realized a few things about referrals. Let me tell you a brief story.
Now, I get it. Okay, thanks.
Right, okay. Look, true story. Last week, I was, came out of the tube station. I was heading to quite an important meeting. And I came out of the tube station, and the rain was biblical. It was just absolutely chucking down. And I had about a 7-minute walk to my destination where I was having this meeting. And trust me, it would have been, I've never seen it. I think it was that storm, whatever it was, that came through recently last week. And I've never seen rain like it. It was, if I'd stepped out on that for more than 30 seconds, I might as well have just jumped in a bath and then go into the meeting. It was that heavy. And I thought, right, I got a couple of options here. I'm either just going to be late for the meeting, just not go. I didn't have the phone number of the person I was meeting, so I couldn't call them and say. Or just go and get absolutely soaked to the skin and just arrive there like a drowned rat. And then lo and behold, across the street, this is Oxford Street in central London, big shopping street. Across the street, I see there's one of these tourist shops. What's he selling? Umbrellas. So with great haste, I run across the street, got soaked in this sort of 30 seconds it took me to run across the street, and went into him and I noticed while I was waiting, looking at it, that he was taking his signs down. And what he was doing was taking his prices down, because he's realized the market has suddenly changed.
Surge pricing for umbrellas.
Completely. So I go across the road and I grab this umbrella. I say, how much? And this is, I say, how much for this umbrella? He says, £20. 20 quid. I thought, and this is an umbrella you'd probably buy on Amazon for about £4.99, I reckon. £20. I think, oh, bollocks. Fine. But I pick up the umbrella, take it to the counter. By the time I get to the counter, the guy at the counter says, all right, mate, there it is, £25. I said, whoa, the guy just at your door, your colleague says 20. I'm arguing with him over five. He says, sorry, mate, it's 25. He's got it wrong. They made the price up completely. What did I do? I said, fine. So I paid it in relation to, it was quite an important meeting I was going to. The point of this story here is there was urgency. I had some urgency, therefore I executed on a purchase decision right there and then. What I've realized, it's a long-winded way of getting here, but it's important because it's fundamental to a referral strategy.
Welcome to the Umbrella podcast.
Very rarely.
Is that how the shirt got ruined running across the road?
Very rarely is the work we do urgent. If it's pouring rain, you go into a meeting, buy an umbrella is urgent. If there's a flood in your house, getting a plumber around is urgent. You're not really quibbling about it. You just go and find a plumber or whatever. Very rarely the work that we do is urgent. And therefore, you've got to think differently. Because if you ask a client for a referral, it's awkward, it's not urgent, and they've got to then pass it on to somebody else that they don't know their circumstances. If you ever need advice, a financial advisor, my guy, my girl is good, you should contact them. It doesn't make any sense. So you can take this a lot of different ways, but there's a couple of ways that I would suggest doing. Number one is just understanding the idea of building funnels, building something of value and of help for clients or prospective clients. So very simply, what you can do is you create a repository for really helpful information that's designed to be given to friends of your clients, colleagues of your clients, etc. You've got to build relationships. What we know is very rarely, as I say, is this stuff urgent. So what we're in the process of doing is building a very simple website landing page, which is a hidden page to the rest of the world, but it contains very relevant, very interesting information that clients can refer their friends to. So there will be a classic lead capture document, something of interest and relevance. And in that, as we know, that's sort of, and we'll talk about this more later in our section on content creation. We are then given opportunity in return for the client, the potential referee's email address, we get permission to drip feed highly relevant, highly appropriate, educational, helpful information, because rarely is the stuff that we do urgent. But if we can drip feed, nurture them over months and months, maybe years, because once you create this, it doesn't matter. And so there you go. So there's just one thing to kickstart this conversation. I've got a few other things I can share with you in terms of practical experiences, but the idea of asking for referrals in client meetings makes no sense to me. It's just so obscure and weird and awkward and unprofessional. But the idea of helping your clients by saying, by the way, we built this piece of this digital piece of information, if you know, and you can make different ones. It could be a pre-retirement one. It could be a number of different specific issues. But we've got some really helpful educational checklists, downloads, workbooks, you name it, that we've got for these friends of yours. If you want, send them a link to it. So you build it into, you make it a repeatable, systemized strategy. Every time you've got an annual planning meeting, for example, every time you're sending out a client newsletter, for example, you send a link to this. This might be helpful. And all you're doing is capturing people's attention and building a list that which you can nurture over time and that they can opt out from at any time if they're not finding it of any value. So that's a starting point. Who wants to go next?
I'll jump in if you want. Look, all great ideas, clearly. Absolutely fantastic, right? For me, that's kind of like the content creation piece that we're going to talk about, because we've done some.
It does cross over a lot. This.
So look, what I thought I'd just kind of talk about is we've built this business entirely, absolutely entirely on client referrals. So, but I'm in the same boat as you, Alan. We don't ask for the referrals, right? So what? One thing that I think is missed a lot is you even kind of said it, Alan, at the very start, you know, oh, do great work and the client referrals will come. Don't miss the first part. Do great work. So what I mean by that is, how can you make the whole financial planning process really, really cool, really, really memorable? So it's obviously just do your cash flow model. It's not, right? And a lot of it is making the clients feel like they are heard, right? So it's a lot about have been brave enough. Like, I remember, and I've spoken about this a lot, you know, when we started talking about goals, dreams and aspirations, it was like, holy shit, the pensions guy is talking to me about fluffy stuff, right? But actually having the bravery to go there with the clients so that when they leave the meeting, they'll walk out, right, and say to each other, or maybe even say to you, wow, that's an awful lot different than I thought it would be, because they will then spread the word. And then it's really small things can help massively. So a client comes into us recently and is talking about buying a boat. And one of the guys that sat in the meeting with me sent the client an email of, here's a boat for sale. You might want to look at that. Now, it was a little bit of a joke because he said this massive, massive yacht, right? But the point is, the client was heard and we kind of made a little bit of a joke out of it, right? Another one, client came in a couple of years ago, want to go to Australia and do a little bit of a tour in my motorhome. And we just sent him a book on touring Australia. So these small things, they're really small. They do not cost a lot, right? But it just tells and shows the client, I'm listening, we are listening, and what matters to you matters to us. And then you make sure, obviously, that it's in the financial plan for the next time you have your AGM with them. You know, how did that go? And we have voice memos after every single meeting, because you can't remember every single case. But if you have a voice memo, here are the main things that came up. Well, then you talk to the clients again about, at the outset, at the start of the meeting, well, the last time you were in, this is what we spoke about. Did you go and do that or whatever? So I think don't underestimate the power of doing great, great work, and then you will be referred on, right? A couple of things that we've done, done lots of different events, as you know, and I think now you learn and you develop and they get better as you go, but trying your best at the outset to do 5-star events, because again, it's, you know, even if it's only a small event, make sure you think about everything, because then people have a good feeling, have a special feeling with dealing with Metis, and that's what we want them to get out of every touch point they get off us. And then it's stuff like doing golf events and saying, hey, Mr. and Mrs. Client, would you like to bring your friends, Mr. and Mrs. Client? You know the kind of work that we do. And look, we'd be delighted just to have a game of golf. We won't talk business. And look, if you feel that it might fit, that has worked really, really well for us. And then, conscious I'm going on a bit here, but the last one I'd talk about is, I was going to mention in our topical tidbits, because we had it last week, right? So our latest client advisory panel, right? The single biggest place where we get the best referrals from, and I know it's not for everyone, and I know Nick hates it, right? But so we have 12 or 14 of our very best clients who come along to 2 events every year, and we tell them how we've done. We tell them what we're planning to do, which is really important when we're in the phase right now. And then they give us input on that. And all of them are absolutely brilliant at referring clients into us. Yes, Nicholas.
So, sorry, Kyle, you tell them what you've done. So you share the business growth with them. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Nice.
So we have, we share with them a lot more than people might think. And that has evolved as well. So we weren't probably telling them a lot of the financials. Client numbers, we share the actual numbers with them. So I think they feel part of the story. They feel very engaged. They want Metis to do really well. Mm. And if all of those boxes are ticked, well then, and there are perfect type of client, remember. So they will refer their peers to us and they just want to help. And you just get that feel. I got the feel, you know, over dinner. So we go to a nice hotel. We do lunch. The meeting is 2 until 5 with a coffee break. Then we have pre-dinner drinks, and then we have dinner. But we spend a few quid on this. This is always a nice place, always a nice venue. And we get obviously when you're talking about very busy people, not everyone turns up all the time. We always get 10 though, you know, so maybe 2, 3, 4 don't turn up, but we always get 10 people. That's enough to, you know, have a really, really good meeting. And what's happened over the last kind of couple of years, especially post-COVID, since they've got to know each other much better, they're all doing some business with each other, which is amazing. Like, that's absolutely amazing. So if I was starting out now, I would find people who maybe even aren't existing clients who I'd like to talk to, and I'd put a client advisory panel together. We call it client advisory panel, by the way, just a small point, so that people don't feel like they're sitting on a board, because client advisory board with the fiduciary responsibilities, whatever. So that's just a small, very small point. But I would, we started that back in 2019. I think we'd be well further on in our growth phase if we started it when we started the business up.
That's brilliant, Carl. That's you told that story in different iterations numerous times, but it is really interesting to listen to that, because it's so different, certainly to what I do and to what Andy does as well, which we just don't do that kind of thing because we're not that kind of business. But I can definitely see the value in what you do. And I know when you do it, you're one of these guys that commits, aren't you? You don't sort of stick your toe half in the water. You go for it, and you always do put on a good event, and it serves you well.
Thank you.
Mr. Hart, what referrals? How do you approach it?
Yeah, I was just thinking about it, so I can go in various different tangents, I suppose, on this. Obviously, I've got various different businesses, various different things. So I do a mix of pretty much, well, what Alan said, I've been doing that for years, obviously capturing email addresses and then giving, you know, information to people. I get quite a lot of referrals from a client who is a client of mine who's an accountant, and they recommend a lot of their clients, and that works really well. I also, probably the second biggest referral channel is other advisors. And other advisors weirdly do pass a lot of clients between each other. For example, I've passed quite a few clients to Carl. If you know, an Irish connection says, do you know an Irish advisor? They go to Carl. And again, lots of advisors contact me and say, Andy, do you know an advisor in Bath, in Glasgow, in Plymouth, in whatever? So advisors do share a lot of clients between each other. The latest client I've taken on is a very good financial advisor. They didn't want to work with someone who's so close within their family. So then they said, well, do you know someone that can help me? And my name came miraculously into their brain. They basically said, you know, this, yeah, you're surprised about that, Nick. You know, this guy will look after you. You know, I think he does similar to what, you know, I do in terms of financial planning, good investment portfolio, and is going to basically give you tough financial love and going to get you to stick to the plan, basically. So that's on the financial advice side. On terms of my advisory focused businesses, you know, I do events, I do lots of stuff online. It's endless. It's constantly working it. So I'll keep it sort of focused on the referrals for the client side. Over to you, Nick.
Okay, thank you. So I am pretty lax on this. I mean, I only get new clients, new families through referrals, the same way that you do, Carl. And you, Alan, as well. But I don't actively seek them because I'm at that stage of my business where I just don't necessarily need to. I probably should be more on top of this, but I don't. I just don't need to. And I get, it's funny, you know, 80% of my clients don't refer people to me, but the 20% that do it all the time. It's just, you know, it's just maybe another iteration of Pareto's rule, you know, the 80-20 thing. And there's no doubt about it. The referred clients, you do not want. We talked earlier in the show about how this race to the bottom. The internet is obsessed with cost and getting the cheapest. And you don't want web trawlers coming to you. That's my view. You don't want people coming to you through the internet who don't know you from Adam, but have just seen your website and think, yeah, you referred clients, they come to you. They're like those baguettes you can buy from the supermarket, the park cooked baguettes. All you need to do, you don't just screw it up. All you've got to do is take the baguettes out and put them in the oven for 10 minutes. They're almost done for you. And a referred client is like that because someone they know will be like them, has the same outlook on life, probably roughly the same money situation, life situation, and said, listen, my advisor, Nick Lincoln, he seems all right. And it's validation. So people mix like with like. They come to you. They're sold on you, really, if they're referred. And you've really got to cock it up. Or there's just got to be something there that you think, hold on, this isn't actually as good a fit as it could be. Otherwise, that's what you want. And if you have a strategy, which Carl does with his client advisory boards, panels even, sorry.
Panel.
Panel. I was trying to think of a client relationship advisory panel. I think that's a better acronym. And Alan with his just giving soft data out and just signing people up to an email list who are it's very loosely prospects, but just feeding them useful stuff that isn't salesy, but is informative. That's another great way of just building up a bank of people that one day may well become clients. Alan,
I just want to come back on a couple of points in terms of real practical applications and where listeners can potentially go from here. And we do have to always bear in mind that all of us here are running, you know, mature businesses, and a lot of others are in startup phase and they're looking for every opportunity they can to maximize opportunities. So everyone should be a bit more intentional. There are surveys out there, participated in surveys in the past where they would ask, we've done it, for example, you ask your clients, it's a kind of net promoter score question. Would you ever refer us to friends, family, colleagues, etc.? You know, most of us would get 90% plus. People say, yeah, I would. If someone asked me, I would. And then you ask, have you ever referred us? And often you'll get responses in the 50, 60%. Yeah, I have referred you. And have you referred us in the last year? Even then the numbers will be quite often. We've done this two or three times. You know, 20% of your clients have referred you in the last year. You look at the actual referrals you received, you think, well, it's nothing like 20% of our client base that we get inquiries from friends or family of these people. So there is an opportunity being missed here. Because as you know, a referral could be bumped into somebody at the proverbial barbecue. Who do you? It's Nick. He's a good guy. I'll give you his phone number, his email address. And no one ever follows up. So trying to be a bit more...
The client thinks that's in their mind, that's a referral. Yeah,
of course I referred you. I'll give you a name to somebody and they did nothing at all with it. So I think there's a couple of opportunities here. And you'd like this, Carl. I'm a big believer in the James Clear Atomic Habits thing, which is don't worry about the outcomes. I've got no control over the outcomes, but try to focus on the inputs. What can we do to, back to this word, systemize? What could we actually do regularly, which will just move the dial a bit? If we increased our referral opportunities, if we captured even half of those ones that people had mentioned to their friend, down the pub, at the barbecue, et cetera, then that's going to help fuel future growth. And also, the other thing, of course, is to think about, I honestly believe this, as a client said to me, I never forget the words he used not long ago, it's shark-infested waters out there. You've saved us. You've saved because it's, let's face it, as we sort of alluded to earlier on, today, some of this stuff, some of the advice, quality advice, costs of advice, et cetera, is not good. So I consider it helping more families, and it's our noble duty and responsibility to do our best to capture more and help more people. So try to systemize this. So for example, we've talked before about the client journey. You've got a welcome meeting. So that's just we just mentioned it. Our welcome meeting, often if we can organize it, is a social over lunch and a glass of wine. Once we've onboarded the client and become, you know, fully embedded clients of ours. And we'll talk about that. We'll go back to the conversation around how they first came to us. If they came to us by referral, we raise that as a conversation. It's great that John referred you to us. That's how we build our business. Are you just drip feeding and you're planning meetings? You're just drip feeding these conversations. And you've got to remember to do it because it's easy just to forget about it. So you build that into a checklist. Various other points. When you first meet a prospective client, if they've come to you as a referral, you say, great, again, great that you were referred to us. That's how we get most of our referrals. You're drip feeding that. If they didn't come to you by referral, you actually say to them, interesting, most of our clients come by referral. It's great that you found us on the internet or whatever, but most of our business is that. So you're constantly providing this sort of feedback loop to your clients. And as I say, focus on the inputs and the outputs will take care of themselves. But I'm sure if you do that consistently, the last sort of action I would say, and this is a version of, because not everyone either wants to, has the ability, organization, or budget to create client relationship advisory panels, as Nick just described them, or client advisory panels, or whatever. An alternative version of that anyone can do tomorrow. I'm sure I talked about this before in previous episodes of Trap, but I've got a lot of time for a guy called Dan Allison, who is a US coach, I suppose, who does exclusively focuses on referral strategies. And he's got this concept. And again, I can post a link in the show notes because a lot of stuff out there on the internet, there's YouTube videos, etc., where he just literally breaks down, including scripts, what he does. So everyone everyone listening to this, think of what you would call your advocates. Who are the clients that just love what you do? Not everyone absolutely loves what you do, but a percentage. It might be 5 people, it might be 10, it might be 20. They are your advocates. And you would reach out to them and offer to buy them breakfast, lunch, coffee, drink, whatever. And you've got a pre-organized conversation you're going to have with them. Number one, you're asking for feedback. How are we doing? Are there any things that we are doing that you wish we weren't doing, or any things we're not doing that you wish that we were? And it's just a general feedback conversation. There's another positioning conversation. It's, can I just share with you a bit? It's no doubt a version of what Carl does in his group meeting with his clients, but it's can I share with you what our plans are for the future? These are some of the things we currently do. This is what our plans are for the future. If they're your advocates and they love what you do and they really enjoy being a client, they're really happy to be part of that conversation. And the last thing you put into this meeting, this social, and it's nothing to do with their sort of annual planning meeting, et cetera. It's a very specific conversation you're going to be having. Is, look, we are planning to grow. We do believe that the best opportunity to grow is through individual referrals. If you're in my circumstances, what would you do? What would you advise me? How would you seek to grow that? And immediately you've told advocates, I didn't even realize you were, they will think, I didn't even know you were planning to grow. You always sound quite busy to me. No, Vic, okay. And they immediately, and again, I'm sure Carl will have examples of this in his group panel meeting, but they say, right, actually, I've got a few ideas. You should speak to my accountant, first of all. I know he deals with a lot of high net worths, et cetera, et cetera. So you get very intentional about having advocate meetings with these clients. And of course, then you must follow up with them. And again, there's a whole process to do that. The resources I've got from this, just two or three books. You should read Nick Murray, The Game of Numbers. You should read a book. There's a guy I've mentioned, before, Graham Eisner, who is the guy I mentioned him before, is the guy that built Goldman Sachs Wealth Management and how to get referrals. He's got a book called Just Ask, which is well worth reading. And there's a guy called Stephen Wershing. Don't know the US guy. You might have seen him. He used to have a podcast all about referrals. His book is actually interesting, called Stop Asking for Referrals, which is all about. So there's a lot of resources out there. There's a few practical things that people can do. But I promise you, if you're going to make any success of this, you do have to be intentional. Doing good work, absolutely, Carl, but it's a hygiene factor. I expect you to do good work. But then you can be a bit more proactive, because clients do want to refer you, but they've got no framework in which to do it. So I hope that helps, Nick.
Okay, Andy, your finger was raised.
I just added a new very Scottish word to Alan Smith's Scottish words. Group. Group.
Brilliant. Yeah, you might well hang your head in shame. You might well hang your head in shame. Thanks for that, Alan. And that's a bit of a Lord referral God. Masterclass there, certainly from Carl and Alan. So thank you for that. We are at 1 hour, 16 minutes in, so I'm conscious that we maybe have given that a damn good thrashing. That's the first of three episodes. The next one is going to be Centers of Influence. Is that correct? And our masterclass.
Yep.
And then we'll follow off with a content masterclass. Yep. And you know, what content are we doing? Why are we doing it? How do we do it? Do we outsource it? How do we distribute it? How do people consume it? So loads to talk about there. So thanks very much for that. And it's just as well that we wrapped it up, because at the front door is Posty. She's hauled the bulging sack up my drive, and it's a chance for us now to just respond to Trappist questions. Posted by you, our beloved audience, the Trappists. You are the show. There's a link in the pinned tweet, the pinned X, whatever you call these things now. Submit your question there. We will come to you going to a ginormous hopper thing, and we're going through the hopper as we can. And this letter, well, I'm going to open it in a second. It's an enormous letter. It's very heavy. Let me just rip this. I'll put it on the desk. That was me dropping it on the desk. So this is from Master J. He sounds like a rap artist. Master J, he has not got a social handle for good reason. Okay, this is another War and Peace one. This is anonymous for good reason. I was recently invited to observe another advisor's client meeting as we were discussing transfer of clients from him to me. It started okay as pre-meeting. We looked at the cash flow, and although we used different assumptions, it kind of made sense. Clients already drawing on investments for living, as he was between consulting gigs, but now considering full-on retirement. The forecast was tight, with 100 grand left at age 99, excluding the house, but it seemed manageable. But throughout the meeting, alarm bells started to ring. The first alarm bell was, early in the meeting, the advisor, not the client, the advisor brought up gifting to the family and how £100,000 might be a good plan as a gift. So Anon's question, Master J, his question is, how much fat in a plan do you like to have before gifting becomes something you raise? Second alarm bell, clients discussed burning through their cash pile, meaning the outgoings were drastically underdisclosed by a multiple of five figures a year, which is a massive underdisclosure. After the meeting, the advisor said that was news to him And they hadn't really discussed this in detail as retirement had only just come up. Question, how far in advance of retirement do you start discussing the mechanics of retirement planning and building the cash buffer reserves? Jesus Christ, Master G, you're getting your value here. Needless to say, I won't be taking on his clients, but it surprised me as we talked the same game, but the standards were way off where I was used to. Okay, I'll have a quick dip at this first of all. Yeah, it seems a bit of a naff meeting. I don't think 100 grand for me, if that's in nominal terms, in 30 years' time when he's 99 or she's 99, 100 grand could be worth 30k. So, but whether it's nominal or real, 100k is tight. And while the advisor is raising gifting, if the client raises it, fine. It's the client's meeting. It's the client's time. But why the advisor would raise that in that situation, definitely wouldn't like to do that. You've got to know, it's very hard, right? We have all the financials, don't we? We can get the valuations off the platform. The client can tell us how much they've got in the bank and all that kind of stuff. If you haven't got just a grasp of what's going out of their bucket each year in terms of their expense, their lifestyle costs, and everything else is a waste of time. And I know it's very difficult to get it right because one year you're going to have more on holidays, you're going to buy replacement cars, but you've got to have a basic grasp of what the client is spending. And if it's clear that every year they say they're spending X, but their cash savings are going down by Y, because they're spending more than they told you, then you've got to have that conversation. You've got to nail that down. So, gents, a very long question there. Any of you want to chip in with a response to Master J, the hip-hop star?
Yeah, I'll just quickly throw in a couple of points. Yeah, you mentioned it there, Nick. The key thing is spending in retirement. With my clients, let's say 3 years away from retirement, I've got a rough grasp of what they're spending, but I sort of, increase the pressure for them to, take it a bit more seriously. So at the point when they are actually in full retirement year, we've got a very clear grasp of their spending down to the nearest sort of £500, 33,500, 60,500. It's quite a tight grasp. It's interesting because he's taken over the client bank. So I think it's quite a good client bank to take over if the
but he hasn't,
job so far.
That's the point.
Well, he's potentially thinking about doing it.
He's declined. That's the point. Needless to say, I won't be taking on the clients.
Well, it depends on where he is in his journey. The fact about giving money away, again, is an important point. I want to have quite a bit of sort of fat in the plan before they're gifting out money to the kids.
Yeah.
Plan A is for them to be financially, financially solvent, have a rock star retirement from sort of now until they pass away. So there needs to be quite a lot of additional fat before they start giving away money. And I do use cautious assumptions on the investment returns. So a couple of points there.
Gents, Alan, Carl?
I have a couple of points. Perhaps it's a little bit more nuanced than the guy or girl who posed the question. Because maybe this is only the second meeting and maybe the client is only beginning to open up. So therefore, stuff like the cash burn, right? So the spending, maybe the client's gone, actually, we're spending a lot more. And I think the both of them probably missed an opportunity to say to the client, we need to, this is very, very, very important. So we need to really kind of dive deep into this one and just explore that a little bit more. And what are your goals, dreams and aspirations? And what's the lifestyle that you want to live? What does living your best life look like? And then kind of tease it out. I think the gifting one is a little bit easy. I can't, for me, right, an advisor introducing gifting cash to kids when the plan is tied out the end, I can't but think that was a question that was asked prior to the meeting. And it was like, can we have a look at this? Like gifting, I'm assuming it's the same in the UK. Like you have lifelong opportunities for that. So postponing gifting for a few years whilst you get into the rhythm of the plan, I think I think that's a kind of a little bit of a no-brainer. But I think the opportunity to stop and really do deep dive around the spending, that's where the real value will come with the financial planning process. And that you build the trust, over years. There's no little switch that you turn on. I don't know the idea of another advisor sitting in kind of critiquing my work, right? It just makes me feel a little bit ick, right? So
I think this sorry Carl, you go on.
Well, just my last point, like making a call and not taking a book of clients based on one meeting, if that's the fact, right? You're mad.
Take the clients on.
Take the clients on.
Well, it depends. If they're all overspending and it's all going to be end in tears, then it's you'd be cautious, be careful. But I think if that is the situation, one meeting, client cash flow is a bit tight, so therefore walk away from a big business opportunity. I would urge caution on that. Perhaps go back in again. I've just got a couple of observations, just sort of adding to what's already been said. My experience, one of the single biggest challenges to long-term cash flow planning is clients underestimating their cash burn, their expenditure. If you're just asking them, how much do you spend on X, Y, and Z, particularly things like holidays, oh, we spend $5,000 a year on holidays. You've just come back from 3 weeks in Barbados, and you went business class, and you spent at the Sandy Lane Hotel. Oh, that was a one-off. Oh, we did it again the year before and the year before. So getting granular, of course, as life goes on, technology helps with these things. You get access to sort of client data, bank accounts, etc. So you get a better understanding. But the most dangerous thing is underestimating cash burn and then not putting enough fat and growth. And look, if you go into retirement, let's face it, you want to live a lovely life. And for a lot of people, it doesn't involve spending money, at least for those what we call honeymoon years, those first 10, 15 years post-retirement. We do want to travel. You don't want to stay in a one-star hotel because you worked hard for 40 years, etc. So I think that's an area to focus on that. And look, I'm a big believer in gifting and the idea of gifting with a warm hand, or gifting with a warm heart and not a cold hand, as they say. So life expectancy now is well into 80s and 90s. People's kids will be in their 50s and 60s when they reach their natural age of death. When you really want access to money, when money is tighter, often when you're in your 30s, 40s, when you've got kids yourself, and you've got school fees and mortgages and all that to pay. So if you can, rather than wait to the end and you've got to, you know, give money on death, etc., give it during that time. But you do need to have to test, because gifting to children is a luxury item. You only do that if you're absolutely pretty robust and resilient and you've got a lot of fat in the not if things are a bit tight on this model. And they've underestimated spending, and it's talking about gifting $100,000 right now. You know, loads of red flags there, but not necessarily enough to walk away from an entire, you know, business transition and taking on all the other clients. But it's an interesting question. Another example that this is an art more than it is a science. There's a lot of creativity required.
Absolutely, absolutely. Okay, I think we've given that a good answer. And maybe the client did raise it with the advisor pre the meeting. Look, I want to look at gifting, and that's why the advisor was thought to have raised it. Okay, let's quickly go on. Oh, 1 hour, 26 minutes. Let's quickly go on to Culture Corner. Wow. Okay, so my one. Okay, so this might have been mentioned before. I'm sure one of you would have, if not all three of you, have this. The Money Beta blog and emails, really, really, really good. A lot of the content that's out there is very US focused, from US advisors or US commentators using US centric stories, understandably. Well, the Money Beta blog and email, three emails a week. This UK based guy, or team of guys and girls, just puts together really good stories, good information, and Irish stories as well. And I would definitely subscribe to that. And there's a link to that in the so-called show notes. I don't know why you're laughing at that, Gold.
Good save.
Yeah. See, I can be empathetic. It does work sometimes. So that's in the show notes, moneybeta.com/subscribe. Smithy.
Yes, very briefly, keep us to time. Really useful source, this again. This does come from the US. A guy called James Pollard, who I understand is a practicing financial planner in the US and does a lot of work, though, for other planners. He's got a lot of content, a website, a podcast. He's the advisor, with the O, as the Americans do tend to spell it, theadvisorcoach.com. Sign up for his newsletter. Listen to his podcast. He's got and it actually really fits in with the theme we're currently working on, which is marketing growth. He's got some interesting ideas on whether or not to outsource to third-party marketing specialists. But yeah, do check out his stuff. Link in the show notes.
Great, great, great. Voice.
Did I put up Ben Carlson's article? I think, yeah, I did, yeah.
Yeah.
Brief history of the 60-40 portfolio. Thought it was really, really good. Ben Carlson's stuff in general is, yes, probably very American, but there's some really great stuff there, and it's all backed up by data. And if you want some comfort around why a 60-40 portfolio will work into the future, you should read that article. I know several people on this podcast do not share the same view, but I thought it was really, really good. So, but check out his stuff, subscribe to his email updates. Really good stuff.
Okay, fab. And finally, Ultra.
Yeah, so this is a real-life police drama series on BBC called The Met. It's the fourth season. Everyone's banging on about it. Check it out if you wish to.
Excellent, excellent. That's good. Got as much connection to financial services as Hotel Chocolat. Okay, I think we're...
And IKEA.
And IKEA. And books you haven't read.
Don't you start with your fucking backpack watch.
It's all F-bombs this week, mate.
Oh,
isn't
my
it?
God, I've burned my sleep.
We cracked him twice.
But he hasn't started.
Sam, you're not at your Weetabix this morning, son.
Oh,
don't use my ones on me.
All right, okay, slags, enough. Okay, so I think we've come to the end of that. Very good. Thank you, as ever, dear Trappist, for enduring this show. If you like us, please do subscribe to the Real Advisor podcast on your podcast app of choice. Rate and review, a 6 out of 5 star review is really, really good. Our average rating is very, very high, and we're very appreciative of that. We're also on YouTube as well. Some people like to watch us. God knows why, but they do. There's enough pain and agony in the world without having our 4 ugly mugs on your TV screen, but it can be done. And on that note, I'm going to say adios. Take care out there, folks, and we'll speak to you again in 2 weeks' time. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye, everyone.
Absolute shambles.
Oh, what a mess.
Two F-bombs.